Welcome to the Untold History Channel. My name is Ron Partain, and I am joined today by one of my very good buddies, Rob Cunningham, and my brother from another mother, man. I tell you the truth, Rob is somebody who our paths crossed probably about a month ago, six weeks ago, and we have become extraordinarily fast friends. There's very few people out there that Rob that I connect with like I had with Rob, and you know, he's become a very good friend, and I'm just very happy to have him on the channel this morning. We're going to talk about just kind of what we're facing, just kind of an overarching discussion about what we're facing and maintaining a good proper attitude through this whole thing. So Rob, how you doing this morning, brother?
Brother, I am great. Thank you. Honored to be on the program with you. I like to say I couldn't get in the military, so I went in the Air Force. But thank you. Thank you for your service. I appreciate that. No, it's good. It's I always get excited for some weird reason. I know it's cultural and I know it's programming, but today's the big Army-Navy game. And it's such an American tradition, you know, mm-hmm. good old camaraderie where – you know, friends can compete and then shake hands and be friends and walk off. And it's just that test of growth and athleticism without it being a blood sport, you know, right. And it's healthy, friendly competition. And my dad was in the Army, and his brother died in World War II flying over in China. And so it's just baked into me.
Well, and my dad was drafted into the Army in I don't remember the year, but he was drafted. He was still going to school, and they allowed him to finish his degree. And before he went in, and then after he went in, he went to OCS, and I think he was the battalion commander for the entire OCS class.
Wow!
So awesome. He was and because of that, he got to stay for the next OCS class and help train them before he went over to Vietnam. So I've got a lot of respect for my dad. Probably even, you know, the older I get and the more I study, the more respect I have for my dad. So that's not to say that I didn't have respect for him then, but I just have a greater appreciation because I know more than I did when he was alive. So, and it would have been nice to have known the stuff that I know now so that I could have, just to cherish that a little bit more, if that makes any sense. So,
well, with age and time comes history and perspective and wisdom, right? And we'll talk about this some today, I'm sure, but you're being such a fan of history, and so am I, that the more and more and more we know about history, the more we study it, then the more clarity and context comes into focus as to where are we on the timeline of life, you know, right? I mean, if you study history and you know it really, really well, then it gives you clarity and wisdom to kind of see where we are and most likely what's going to happen in the future. And I agree. Because history just repeats itself. But if we don't study history, we're condemning ourselves to being fooled and led around by the nose and tricked and deceived. And all the magic tricks that they use on us to keep us in the 3D, you can see those when you study history and you derive the lessons from history and the wisdom that comes from history. Then you can go, oh, I see you're trying to lead me down that path again. And the paths are different colors and different seasons. And maybe the path's on the desert or it's in the mountains or it's, you know, by the beach, you know, but the theme and the principles of where they're trying to take us are the same, even though correct. The surroundings in the era might be different. So, you know, I ask people all the time, and I try to teach my kids, you know, it's like, if we are enslaved by our lack of knowledge, then you have to ask yourself, if people are trying to make us dumb or separate us from history, ask yourself, who are those people trying to benefit from our ignorance? Who's cultivating ignorance? Who's dumbing us down? And who's trying to profit from our ignorance? Because the only way they can enslave us is through our lack of knowledge and wisdom, right? So there is an ulterior motive. If people will look at almost, let's just use our own government. Any department, any agency that gets started in the swamp immediately degrades whatever they say their stated purpose is. Department of Energy, Department of Health, Department of Education, you know, you name it. You look at where's the grades of kids in America once the Department of Education was hired. I mean, it started in, what, 1979 by Jimmy Carter? Our grades have done nothing on a national stage but gone down. Has our health gotten any better?
Nope.
Is our energy situation any better?
Nope.
Is our transportation system better? I mean, the department. Nope. The point being is, you know, we've got to humble ourselves to the point where if we're willing to humble ourselves and seek wisdom and then study history, we'll know where we are on the journey. And then we can live accordingly and safely and freely and unslave ourselves from the chains of ignorance. But that's where the old adage comes from. Those who fail to study history are doomed to repeat it.
Amen to that.
Right?
1,000% correct with that. And, you know, there was a do you remember the old movie with Rodney Dangerfield when he went back to school? Do you remember that movie called Back to School?
Absolutely do. Yeah.
And, you know, there was, I want to play something real quick. This is just kind of it's a moment of levity, but I want to play this because it was, let me find this here. Cause you know, I want to, you know, remember that article that I read to you yesterday? I want to read a passage from that as well. In fact, I'm going to read that first and then I'm going to play this, but let me pull this up because this is just, guys, we're doing this on the fly. We were supposed to, I was supposed to do a big round table this morning with a big group of patriots, but that got pushed back for a week. So we're just kind of just doing this, on the fly. And, something that Rob said just kind of,
triggered you.
Triggered me. Exactly. That is the right word. It triggered me on something, and I've played this before, but I'm going to play it again because I think it's such a big deal. Let me find it here. So Rodney Dangerfield goes back to school, and he is. He gets into this college. All right, I found that. But the first thing I want to do is I want to go read that article that I sent to you. And let me find that. Because this is a big deal. Actually, I'm going to read a couple of different things. So how's your day going out there in Georgia? What's the weather like today?
It's kind of pouring down rain. Looks like it's going to rain all day. So it's just got a lazy family day with the dogs. Mama's gone to do some girl stuff with my daughter. And we have a Christmas party at 7:00 tonight. So that'll give you just enough time to hang out with you and your cool audience. Awesome. And watch a little Army-Navy game and go to a Christmas party with a bunch of really cool people.
That's awesome. You know, I remember, I don't know, do you remember when Trump said that what he wanted to do was to let the guys that were really good at the Army Navy game, or at least they were on the Army Navy squad, if they wanted to go play professionally, they could defer their service. Do you remember that?
I do.
And I thought that was exceptional because, you know, you look back at the old, you know, really before there was professional sports, the collegiate level was where the total that was really kind of like the pinnacle until the professional sports thing came around. And now if you get done with your military service, or if you get done, once you graduate the military academy, you have to go into the military for 6 years before you can even come back and then play. And I think what Trump wanted to do is he wanted to,
let them use their prime years and play football, make the money, and then go serve.
Exactly. Right. And I think that was a fantastic, thing to do. So, let me see here. I'm almost here, guys. Sorry. This was total last minute, not prepared, but, I think you guys will get something out of this. All right. So first things first, I'm not going to tell you who I'm reading about, but I am going to read something from, and some of you guys may have heard this, and some of you may have not. There's that, and then there's this. Okay, so this is a passage written by a guy named DeGrille Leon, and he was a member. Well, I'm not going to tell you what he was because I don't want to give it away, but he was a member of a military, and he knew somebody with he knew somebody personally with extensive experience, and he wrote this article after a lot of things, and it's going to paint a little bit of a different picture, a unique picture. And I want to say that I'm not necessarily celebrating this individual, but I want to just kind of give a little bit of a different slant, a different take. So, where did the just .com thing go? Whatever. Okay. All right here. Here we go. So the mountains of books based on this individual, written with blind hatred and ignorance, do little to describe or explain the most powerful man I've ever known. How I ponder, do these thousands of portraits of this gentleman in any way resemble him? It has become impossible to explain to people who've been fed fantastic tales for decades that what they have heard or read on television just does not correspond to the truth. They have come to accept fiction repeated 1,000 times over as reality, yet they've never seen him, spoken to him, never heard a word from his mouth, and the very name conjures up a grimacing devil, the fount of all of one's negative emotions. Like Pavlov's bell, the very mention of his name is meant to dispense with substance and reality. And then there's another passage here, says, at a certain point in time, this person was accused of every cruelty, but it was not in his nature to be cruel. He loved children. It was an entirely natural thing for him to stop his car and share food with cyclists along the road. Once he stopped and he gave his raincoat to a derelict who was plodding in the rain. At midnight, he would interrupt his work and prepare food for his dog. He could not bear to eat meat because it meant the death of a living creature. He refused to have so much as a rabbit or a trout sacrificed to provide for his food. He would allow only eggs on his table because egg laying meant that the hen had been spared rather than killed. Now there's that, and then this gentleman was self-taught, and he made not an attempt to hide the fact, the smug conceit of intellectuals and their shiny ideas packaged like so many flashlight batteries irritated him. His knowledge that he acquired through selective and unremitting study, he knew far more than thousands of diploma-decorated academics. I don't think anyone ever read as much. He normally read one book every day, always reading the conclusion and the index in order to gauge the work's interest for him. And he had the power to extract the essence of each book and then store it in his computer-like mind. I've heard him talk about complicated scientific books with faultless precision. His intellectual curiosity was limitless. He was readily familiar with the writings of the most diverse authors, and nothing was too complex for his comprehension. He had a deep knowledge and understanding of Buddha, Confucius, and Christ, as well as Luther, Calvin, and Savonarola, of literary giants such as Dante, Schiller, Shakespeare, and Goethe, and analytical writers like Renan, Gabino, Chamberlain, and Sorrell. He trained himself in philosophy by studying Aristotle and Plato. He could quote entire passages of Schopenhauer from memory. Nietzsche taught him about the willpower. His thirst for knowledge was unquenchable. He'd spend hundreds of hours studying the works of Tacitus and Mommsen, military strategists such as Clausewitz, and empire builders such as Bismarck. Nothing escaped him, world history or the history of civilizations. The study of the Bible and the Talmud, Thomistic philosophy, and all the masterpieces of Homer, Sophocles, Horace, Ovid, Tacitus, Livius, and Cicero. He knew Julian the Apostate as if he had been his contemporary. His knowledge extended into mechanics. He knew how engines worked. He understood the ballistics of weapons. He astonished the best medical scientists with his knowledge of medicine and biology. The universality of his knowledge may surprise or displease those unaware of it, but it is nonetheless a historical fact. He was one of the most cultivated men of the century. And then I'm just for brevity, I'm going to go back. I'm not going to read this whole thing. I'll put the link in the description if you guys choose to go and look at it. But I want to end with this. This gentleman believed deeply in God. He called God the Almighty, master of all that is unknown and known and unknown. Propagandists have portrayed him as an atheist, but he was not. He had contempt for hypocritical and materialistic clerics, but he was not alone in that. He believed in the necessity of standards and theological dogmas, without which, he repeatedly said, the great institution of the Christian church would collapse. These dogmas clashed with his intelligence, but he also recognized that it was hard for the human mind to encompass all the problems of creation, its limitless scope and breathtaking beauty. He acknowledged that every human being has spiritual needs. The song of the nightingale, the pattern and color of a flower, that continually brought him back to the great problem of creation. No one in the world has ever spoken to me so eloquently about the existence of God. He held this view not because he was brought up as a Christian, but because his analytical mind bound him to the concept of God. His faith transcended formulas and contingencies. God for him was the basis of everything, the ordainer of all things, his destiny and that of all others. Now, that I'm going to just pause there for a second, and I'm going to see if anybody in the chat, if anybody knows who I'm talking about. And I think Rob knows who I'm talking about. It looks like somebody's got it right. Yes, that Rob, you want to give that away?
You know, it's a layup. We already talked about this yesterday. I'm more interested to hear. Give it a few more minutes and let okay. your audience.
Let me give one from David Lloyd George, former Prime Minister of Britain. I have now seen the famous leader, and also mentioned something of the great change he has effected. Whatever one may think of his methods, they are certainly not those of a parliamentary country. There can be no doubt that he has achieved a marvelous transformation in the spirit of the people and their attitude towards each other and in their social and economic outlook. He rightly claimed that in 4 years, his movement had made a new country. It is not the country of the first decade that followed a debilitating war, dejected and bowed down with a sense of apprehension and impotence. It is now full of hope and confidence and a renewed sense of determination to lead its own life without interference from the any influence outside of its own frontiers. There is, for the time since that, the page froze here. There is, for the first time since that war, a general sense of security. The people are more cheerful. There is a great sense of general gaiety. Let me pause this and start all of this. This page just froze on me. There is a greater sense of general gaiety and the spirit throughout the land. It is a happier country. I saw it everywhere. And Englishmen I met during my trip who knew this country were impressed with the change. One man has accomplished this miracle. He's a born leader of men, a magnetic and dynamic personality with a single-minded purpose, a resolute will, and a dauntless heart. He is not merely in name, but in fact a national leader. He has made this country safe against potential enemies by whom they were surrounded. He's also securing them against constant dread of starvation, which is one of the most poignant memories of the last years of the war and the first years of the peace. Over 700,000 people died of sheer hunger in those dark years. You can still see the effect on the physique of those who were born into that bleak world. The fact he's rescued his country from fear of repudiation of that period of despair, penury and humiliation has given him an unchallenged authority in the modern country. As to his popularity, especially among the youth, there can be no manner of doubt. The old trust him, the young idolize him. It is not the admiration accorded to a popular leader. It is the worship of a national hero who has saved his country from utter despondency and degradation. To those who have actually seen and sensed the way he reigns over the heart and mind of his country, the description may appear extravagant. At the same time, it's bare truth. The great people will work better, sacrifice more, and if necessary, fight with a greater resolution because this man asks them to do so. Those who do not comprehend this central fact cannot judge the present possibilities of this country. The impression, more than anything I witnessed during my short visit, was a revivalist atmosphere. It had an extraordinary effect in unifying the nation. Catholic and Protestant, Prussian and Bavarian, employer and workman, rich and poor, have been consolidated into one people. Religious, provincial, and class origins no longer divide. There is a passion for unity born of dire necessity. I have never met a happier people. And this man is the one who is responsible and is one of the greatest men I've ever met. So there is a few people that have gotten that correct. But I'll let you give I'll let you deliver if you want to.
Sounds to me like the alt news of the time. Mr. Adolf Hitler.
Yes, sir. That is correct. Now, I don't say that to say that, you know, I didn't know him. And there's a lot of things out there that are that speak negatively about him. And you know what? I don't know if those things are true or not. But so many times our leader Trump is compared to him in a negative way. But I see so many parallels there. You know, they talk about the economic miracle, and this is one of the things that I want to kind of hone in on. You know, we live in a country where I think there is a tremendous parallel between what that gentleman did and what Trump is doing. You know, when Hitler was brought up on trial for trying to overthrow the country, he used that opportunity to get his message out to the world, and it was successful. He did a very good job. That was when he wrote his book Mein Kampf, And that basically made him a very wealthy man. People don't realize that. But even with all that wealth that he had, he never kept a wallet. He never spent any of that money. It didn't occur to him to do so. He wasn't materialistic. He didn't care about money, much like Trump. You know, Trump didn't really. I mean, what did he do when he came to the presidency? He's like, yeah, I don't need a salary. Just give me a dollar. You remember that?
Indeed.
Trump just gave him, just said, just pay me a dollar. If you got to pay me something, pay me a dollar. And, you know, and when you look at all
of that. Well, actually he did it better. He took it out of the hands of allowing the Treasury to keep it. And he got paid a dollar, but every year or month or quarter, he picked a beneficial recipient of his income, right? He would say, okay, my salary is going to this charitable or this nonprofit or this philanthropic group. So this year I'm donating my, you know, $400,000 or $399,999 to, you know, a deserving entity, which was, I think, even more prudent expenditure of money instead of leaving it in the hands of swamp creatures, right?
Mm-hmm. Amen. And, you know, I want to share this here because this is very important, and a lot of people, I think, they don't know this. Let me share the screen here because this is the full inauguration speech, but I'm not going to play the whole thing. I'm just going to play a portion of it, and this is a really important event specifically right here that people, I don't think they really truly comprehend the magnitude of this particular part. I'm going to play this real quick here. You guys in the chat, let me know if you can hear this.
And First Lady Michelle Obama.
Let me know if you guys can hear this. They said that they couldn't hear it. Let me do this.
Thank you. Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power.
Pause that for a second. Are you guys able to hear the sound now? Give me a 5x5 if you're able to hear sound. Okay.
Power from Washington, D.C. and giving it back to you, the people. For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost. Washington flourished, but the people did not share.
Okay, so that is the brief clip of that. And now the reason that I play that is when Trump said that he was going to take the power away from the people in D.C. and give it back to the people. Did you see how the military came behind him and stood there for that brief moment in time? Did you see that, Rob?
Yes. And do me a favor, if you don't mind, can you back that up about halfway into the speech? Because one of the things that I've heard Derek Johnson, he first introduced this concept to me, But if you'll stop right about, let's see, when they first come down, everything in this world, Ron, is about communications. Okay, it's comms. Whether it's Morse code, whether it's flags at half staff or full staff or three flags or a flag upside down, a flag on a boat, it communicates a message, a branding, a territory, an ownership. Yeah, have them walk down. As soon as they start to walk down, you can stop it. The point that I wanted to bring up is President Trump, if nothing else, is a master showman. He's a master communicator. He knows about the art of the deal. He had for 8 years, right, a top rated 8 consecutive years, you know, The Apprentice. Mm-hmm. He made gazillions of dollars for NBC or, you know, whoever hosted the show for him. He understands speech, communication, leadership, business, messaging, and the art of war, right? So how do you come out and tell people things that they want to see and hear without telling them directly what they want to see and hear, without you coming under withering attack, or right, the people that understand what you're saying come under withering attack? The braids on the hat of the military intelligence.
Yeah. I figured that was where you were going.
Yeah. That wasn't just military that came down. There was somebody from every branch, but the people that came and stood right behind him in plain view were two military members that had braids on their hat that represented military intelligence. Okay. And justice.
Not an immediate. I'm going to mute it here so that we don't have to compete with it. But you tell me, so like we'll stop when we see them.
Yeah, all we need is the image. We don't even need to hear anything. It's just, again, this is by listening to this. Look at the motions. Oh, he hates him. This is a Marxist communist that can't stand this. Stop right there. So If you'll look to the left, the yellow and blue braid on that hat, I believe, I believe that is military intelligence. Okay, right there. And then the one here on the right I believe it's the UCMJ, the military law division. But the point is, who can transfer power back to the people in a way that has ultimate authority to do so? That would be the military, because the only law that we had in the land for 11 years before the Constitution was ever signed was a Uniform Code of Military Justice. And on our Declaration of Independence, it said, if this form of government ever becomes abusive to your rights and your unalienable rights, the people of America reserve the right to set the corrupt, broken government aside and start anew. Well, the only way the people of America could do that is with the authority vested to it by the only form of law in existence when the Declaration was signed. That was a Uniform Code of Military Justice. That was the only law of the land for 11 years until we got a Constitution. So if we needed to get rid of a Babylonian government that has enslaved us, that has been corrupted, that has been perverted, that has been sold off to the Rothschilds or the central bankers or the City of London or the Vatican or whoever else, and we know that this whole corporation is an insolvent, you know, septic tank, and we need to set it aside and start anew, well, it's probably going to take military justice or military intervention, at least in a short period of time, to help us transition back to a new form of civilian-led governmental leadership, not a corrupted group or cartel that have been purchased by foreign bankers. So the questions that we all have to ask ourselves, Ron, do we have foreign banker influence in America? Has foreign banking influenced media? Is that why Trump said the the media is the virus?
Mm-hmm.
Well, have we been lied to since the day we were born about virtually everything from fake food to fake right. money to fake education to fake morality to fake faith? I mean, until we can humble ourselves and seek wisdom and see what's happened, because far too many people have decided to throw their faith and their morality away for a price tag. Everybody seems to have a price.
Right.
As we get to a point where people have been, they've taken a knee to the temple of money. Didn't God tell us we have one choice? We either worship him and his values and principles and laws, or we don't.
Right.
That's really our only choice. And those that have decided, you know what? I can do some of those. I'm not going to do all of them, but damn, 10 million is a lot of money. I need to take the money. You know, well, no, you don't need to. The point being is, if we want to find corruption and we want to find criminality, you don't need to look very far to find the three bits of silver right near the feet of the person that's doing the act.
Amen to that. Now, let's see here. So I don't see a military police.
I didn't think it was military police. I'll look it up and we'll share it with your audience later. I don't want to distract us, but
I'm looking at it right here. So here, right here, this is the judge advocate general.
That's it. JAG. That's the justice. Yeah.
JAG. This is the JAG thing. And then that is right here.
And yes, correct. And the one that's blue and yellow, I believe is intelligence.
Let's see, would be military intelligence parade. Yeah, you're right.
There you go. Justice and intelligence. How about that?
No.
You think that's an accident?
No. That is not an accident.
That is a calm. And they were there for, 30 seconds? They knew what word would trigger them. When he got to that word, they did an about face and went right back to their seats.
Well, yeah. And in fact, let's do it again just because...
Let's see exactly what words were spoken when military and justice are in the screen, because I'll bet you that was choreographed. What do you bet?
I 100% agree. So let's listen to his words.
They have been magnificent. Thank you. Thank you.
Now, one thing that he did here is he said, hey, I want to thank the Obamas. They have been magnificent. That's straight out of the deal. He, even though he cannot stand these guys, he still praises them in public.
Well, and you know what? It's so amazing. We were just having a Vulcan mind meld moment, because you were tracking me and I was tracking you, and I was going to exactly go down that line of thought. But here's this. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, what if he meant they've been magnificent for the last 4 hours since we met them? They've hosted us magnificently. Don't infer he was saying their presidency has been magnificent. They've been magnificent for 8 years. That is us putting our bias or wanting to hear something that he didn't say. He was polite, like you said, art of the deal. Mm-hmm. They have been magnificent for the last 2 hours.
Right.
Since Melania gave them the Jackie Kennedy blue present box, they've been magnificent.
Exactly. Now let's listen to his words as he goes through this.
Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning, because today we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, party to another, but we are transferring power.
Ron, can you pause?
DC, and
look exactly what he did. Now they all came down, but then the ones in the middle cleared out and went away, and it was a perfectly clear view, front and center, left and right, intelligence and justice, military intelligence, and judge advocate general on the right. And guess what? What did one of the drops say? It always had to be the military.
Mm-hmm.
It always had to be the military. What else did it say? We're going to save Israel for last.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, none of this is not coincidental.
No.
Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah, no, you're fine. You're fine.
Giving it back to you, the people.
And they're giving it back because it was stolen.
Yes.
For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost.
So now he said what he needed to say, and now the military are turning around and walking away. But in that moment, when he said that we are giving it back to you, the people, the military was behind him.
Washington flourished, but the people.
So that is an extraordinarily important calm right there, I believe. An extraordinarily important calm.
Yeah, Ron, so let's do this. Let's go back. I want to maybe do a thought exercise with your audience. Sure. And look at why in the world would this is hypothetical. Okay, let's just do a mental exercise. Number one, we know that Vanguard and BlackRock own about 90-95% of all the media companies that do all of the broadcasting. They do social media companies, the technology companies, the Hollywood studios, the Disney, ABC, NBC, CBS. And if people don't know, the ultimate demonic public-private partnership is BlackRock and Vanguard, mm-hmm. because one is public and one is private, if you didn't know that.
Right.
So anything that comes out of the BlackRock media machine that's owned by the BlackRock, the Black Cartel, is for the most part going to broadcast only things that are beneficial for the black media, right? Precise. So that's a truism that probably goes back thousands of years. But let's just take it to the days of World War II. If the media, for whatever reason, needed to character assassinate someone without actually assassinating someone, they would probably give them the Trump treatment. Mm-hmm. They would probably. And so using common sense and wisdom, knowing who owns the microphone and who prints the money and who's seeking power and who wants control and who's profiting off the war and who needs to deceive the public, it becomes very simple to understand that whoever the media hates is probably the opposite of what they say. Whoever the media vilifies, whoever the media tries to call anything but a son or daughter of God is probably worth taking a second look at. Speaking of Alex Jones, anybody see the Alex Jones video with Tucker Carlson this week?
Yeah.
I mean, look at a man that has never been probably more vilified and hated than anyone in the world. And he came across last night as gentle, informed, intelligent, a good protective daddy bear trying to take care of his family and has good motives. And although no man is perfect, he's by no means the creature that they've made him out to be. And yet they savaged him for having the audacity to speak truth to power and or set an example that they don't want others to set. So throughout the ages of history, look, they didn't like Jesus, so they nailed him to a damn board. Right? I mean, if they don't like you, if the media hates you, if the media vilifies you, if the textbooks vilify you, yep. We would probably be more accurate going playing the opposite game than we would even reading a book. We can just go, tell me all the 8,000 people the media hates. Okay, that's my team. Right. I mean, they hated Rush Limbaugh. Was he a good dude? You know, I mean, they hated JFK. What'd they do to him? They hated Donald Trump. What'd they do to him? Why would they hate Adolf Hitler so much? Couple of things in the data points that we might want to look at is after they didn't get what they wanted with World War I, and then they crashed the German economy and the Weimar Republic happened. And then the next thing you know, they created their own internal currency, just like Gaddafi did, just like Kennedy wanted to do, just like, you know, Trump wants to do, bring back gold, just like the BRICS nations are doing. They wanted their own independent currency without usury interest rates and without privateers, private central bankers being involved. Well, they had the most vigorous, healthy, dynamic, rich country on earth. They went from the Weimar Republic to a new currency that Hitler put together. They couldn't let that example stand. They had to vilify him and destroy him. They didn't want him. They didn't want his idea of independent sovereignty and prosperity and national mercantilism, national wealth, to take hold in the minds of other leaders and other nations around the world. So they had to do a complete psyop to get the world to hate the man and not even be able to speak his name, because he's the antithesis of what central bankers are all about. They want the wealth. They don't want the wealth to be retained inside of a nation's borders. They want to suck it all out of a nation's borders. And Adolf Hitler's economic model in Germany was something they could not let stand.
No.
And they hit it with everything they had.
In fact, let me go ahead and talk about that for a second. I'm going to find something, because this is not me talking about it. Let's see here.
Well, Ron, while you're looking for that, I mean, just, and again, what I want to share with the audience is the old axiom, follow the money. Why do we follow the money? Because it shows you who has the power, who spoke the words, who gave the orders, who told people to take a certain action, and who then profit off of the words they spoke, the actions that they want others to take, and who prioritizes the outcome, okay? Who's benefiting from an act? So the point of this exercise is not Adolf Hitler good or bad. That's right. Not the point of this discussion. No. The point of this discussion is who did what to who and why?
Right.
Was there a booming economy? Matter of fact, yes. You know, was it an internal currency with no interest? Matter of fact, yes. Were there competing interests between what he was doing and what the central bankers wanted? Matter of fact, yes. So just stop with those three data points. If follow the money is a truism, and central bankers were all wars are bankers' wars, and World War II was the pivotal war for them to consolidate power and banking interest all over the world, and we want to follow their motives, well, their motives are 180 degrees opposite of what was going on inside of Germany before World War II started. You don't have to be Albert Einstein or Nikola Tesla to connect those dots. That's the only point we're trying to make.
You're preaching to the choir. Now listen to this. This is a rabbi talking about it.
A Jewish rabbi.
The first two laws that Hitler implemented, Hitler, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro, first two laws that Hitler implemented that not only put him in a different status than everybody else for the rest of history, but also made what's called until this day the biggest financial miracle in history. Who knows the first two laws? Before the Nuremberg laws. Before that, we're talking about years before it. Hitler first comes into power. What's the first two laws? Okay, I'll save you the time. Rule number one, no more pornography. No more homosexuality. None of that garbage. Not allowed. Berlin in the 30s, in the 20s, was the Sodom and Gomorrah of the day. They were the Las Vegas of the day. They were the Sodom and Gomorrah of the day. Homosexuality, pornography, all the bestiality, all the garbage of the world, that was the capital of the world. He outlawed it. You're no longer allowed, closed all the bars, all the gay clubs, all the production, which were all run by Jewish people, unfortunately. Second rule. What's the second rule? Second rule was, you're not allowed to charge interest. No more interest. Now you would think, why? What does he care about interest? Well, because all the people that had the money, that lent the money out, were Jews. He didn't like it. He said no more interest. Why? Because of the high interest that the Jews charged people was so high, it ruined, it destroyed the economy in Germany. They destroyed, just like they destroyed Russia a few years before that through their communism over there. Jews destroyed Russia, not Goyim. Jews destroyed. Communism is by Jews. Well, don't let anybody confuse you. You look at history, Karl Marx, all the other Rishayim, they're all Jews. Wicked, but nonetheless Jews. They destroyed Russia, and he wrote in chapter 2 of Mein Kampf, they destroyed Russia, now they're destroying Germany, that's why I have to destroy them. Now, this doesn't make he's right. Point is, that's actually real true history. Now, he saw that the Jews are controlling the financial system and they're charging such high interest, they destroyed the German economy to the extent that by the time you arrived to go to the store to buy bread, you had to take a whole horse carriage full of money. By the time you arrive at the store, it wasn't enough. Why? Because the inflation rate was so high. The bread became so much more valuable and your money went down. So now he says, what's this, the cause of this? Because nobody could afford to do anything because the interest rates are so high. So he decided no more interest rates. You're not allowed to charge interest rates. And at that time, the Great Depression was happening around the entire world. Everyone was in a financial collapse. America was a financial collapse. England was a financial collapse. Everybody else was collapsing. Germany collapsed worse than everybody else. But after he passed this law of no more interest, within 6 years, Germany became the leading wealthiest economy in the world. They called it a financial miracle. Why? They were the only ones that were bold enough to stop interest. This is one of the biggest reasons of why he hated Jews. Because they destroyed the economy because of their greed. Rabotai, it's not making them right. Don't let this confuse you. But this is happening again.
Ron, let me just say this real quick, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead, brother.
The undeniable truth of what this man just talked about not allowing interest to be charged, having honest money. The profiteers, the central bankers, the issuers of the debt could not allow that. But here's the most important thing. What in the Bible, what is the ultimate history book? The law book, the Bible, tell us to be aware of. To be aware of those who call themselves Jews but are not.
Yep.
Just because I call myself an NBA basketball player or you call yourself a fighter pilot, if you're not one, you're not one. Mm-hmm. If I'm not one, I'm not one. Just because somebody tries to hide under a religion and get protection from a label and call themselves more moral or virtuous or Jewish and they're Khazarian and they can't even spell Jewish with a tutor and they're hiding behind a label. And then where are we today? Anti-Defamation League. You're not allowed to speak anything unless they give you absolute carte blanche. You have to get a permission slip from the Anti-Defamation League to know what you can and can't say about the religion of Judaism, not about the Jewish people, about the corporate state of Israel and the Zionist methodology of governance or the corporate structure of the Zionistic system. Zionism does not equal Judaism.
No.
And I like to tell people this. It's kind of humorous, but it illustrates the point. Jesus did not tell Peter, upon this rock, go and establish 47,501c3 Christian churches.
Right.
That's not what he was talking about. That is not what the state of Israel, owned by central bankers with a corporate document in the city of London, carved out in the desert in the middle of Islamic land, called Palestine, is not the biblical Judaism that so many people get their feathers ruffled about when they try to have an objective, common sense, rational conversation. Here come the Bible thumpers. Here come the Puritans. Here come the judgment police. Here comes the, you can't say that. I've been in the church for 42 years. You can't tell me that. Okay, I can't tell you. That's just closed-mindedness and arrogance. That's a refusal to study history. That's a refusal to not be fearful. We were told 365 times, fear not. Don't be afraid if we got it wrong because they lied to us. They lied to all of us. They've lied to all of us. We don't need to be fearful to admit it. Let's take a little piece of humble pie. Realize that all wars are bankers' wars. Everybody that served you and me alike. The cover story as to why we went to war was very different than the truth of why we went to war.
Mm-hmm.
They wrap a flag around us. If we survive and don't get killed and come back, everybody golf claps for us. And I'm not trying to diminish our service because we did it for noble reasons.
Correct. But
the reason we went and fought wars were deceptive reasons. Yep. We were lied to. And our buddies were killed mm-hmm. over a lie. Our buddies were killed for money and power, not for honor that they told us it would. They were honorable because they died believing a lie, but they believed they were fighting for principles about nobility and freedom and independence and unalienable rights and spreading those principles around the world. But unfortunately, we were deceived. It wasn't about spreading nobility and honor and moral principles around the world. It was about making a bunch of asshole bankers more money.
Right. That's exactly correct. That is exactly correct. The there was one other thing that let me find it here. It was one other thing that I found, and it was this. You know, this is actually really. This is really interesting. This is something that most people are unaware of. He was self-taught, and he made no attempt to hide the fact that his smug conceit of intellectuals and their shiny ideas packaged like so many flashlight batteries irritated him at times. His own knowledge he had acquired through selective and unremitting study, and he knew far more than thousands of diploma-decorated academics. I don't think anyone had ever read as much as he did. He normally read one book every day, always reading the first or the conclusion and the index in order to gauge the work's interest for him. He had a power to extract the essence of the book and store it in his computer-like mind. I've heard him talk about the complicated science books with faultless precision, even at the height of the war. His intellectual curiosity was limitless. He was readily familiar with the writings of the most diverse authors, and nothing was too complex for his comprehension. He had a deep knowledge and understanding of Buddha, Confucius, and Christ, as well as Luther, Calvin, and Savonarola, of literary giants like Dante, Schiller, Shakespeare, and Goethe, and analytical writers such as Renan and Gobineau, Chamberlain, and Sorrell. He trained himself in philosophy by studying Aristotle and Plato. He could quote entire paragraphs of Schopenhauer from memory. His thirst for knowledge was unquenchable. He'd spent hundreds of hours studying the works of Tacitus and Mommsen, military strategists like Clausewitz, empire builders like Bismarck. Nothing escaped him. But the point, you know, I'm not going to go through all this whole thing, but the thing that I thought was very interesting at the very beginning when he says his smug conceit of intellectuals and their shiny ideas packaged like so many flashlight batteries irritated him at times. And to me, that is a perfect depiction of what we face today.
Ron, it's peacock feathers. It's what Jesus said. You know, look at that guy over there praying in the corner. He goes, oh, he's got his reward. Don't worry about it. Leave him alone. He's out there strutting his peacock feathers and so people would look at him preening. Look at me. Aren't I virtuous? I mean, that's all he's saying is, look,
right. These
people make me sick because they're hypocrites. They're doing this for show. They want to sound good. They're mentally masturbating themselves.
Right.
They want to act like they're damn cool. And it's like fingernails on a chalkboard. Mm-hmm. You know.
And that's why I wanted to show this, because this is the it's a short clip from the movie Back to School. And I thought this was such a fantastic depiction of somebody who, I mean, it's obviously comedy, and, you know, but there's truth to this, because this guy is an academic and he is in a world of academics. He's never done anything in the real world.
He's in the bubble.
He's in the bubble and he's book learned, but he doesn't know shit about the real world. And this little short brief clip is just fantastic in illustrating that. This is just, it's only like, I think it's about a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
We've got a lot to cover and time is short.
There are two kinds of people in business today, the quick and the dead. So rather than waste your time this semester with a lot of useless theories, we're going to jump right in with both feet and create a fictional company from the ground up. We'll construct our physical plant. We'll set up an efficient administrative and executive structure. Then we'll manufacture our product and market it. I think you'll find it very interesting and a lot of fun. So let's start by looking at construction costs of our new factory.
What's the product?
That is immaterial for the purposes of our discussion here. But if it makes you happy, let's say we're making tape recorders.
Tape recorders? Are you kidding? The Japs will kill us on a labor course.
Okay, fine. Then let's just say they're widgets.
What's a widget?
It's a fictional product. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Tell that to the bank.
Take it easy. It's the first day, you know.
I'm bored.
You will see a cost analysis for construction of a 30,000 square foot facility, which will encompass both factory and office space, and is fully serviced by all utilities, a railroad spur line, and a 4-bay shipping dock.
Hold it. Why build? Hey, you're better off leasing at $1.25, $1.50 a square foot. Take your down payment and put it into CDs, or something else you can roll over every couple of months.
Thank you, Mr. Mellon. But we'll be concentrating on finance a little later in the term. For the time being, let's just concentrate on the construction figures, shall we? You will see the final bottom line requires the factoring in of not just the material and construction costs, but also the architect's fees and the costs of land servicing.
Oh, you left out a bunch of stuff.
Oh, really? Like what, for instance?
Well, first of all, you're going to have to grease the local politicians for the sudden zoning problems that always come up. Then there's the kickbacks to the carpenters. And if you plan on using any cement in this building, I'm sure the team should like to have a little chat with you, and that'll cost you. Oh, and don't forget a little something for the building inspectors. Then there's a long-term cost, such as waste disposal. I don't know if you're familiar with who runs that business, but I assure you it's not the Boy Scouts.
That'll be quite enough, Mr. Mellon. Maybe bribes and kickbacks and mafia payoffs are how you do business. But they are not part of the legitimate business world. And they're certainly not part of anything I'm teaching in this class. Do I make myself clear?
Sorry, just trying to help, that's all.
Now, notwithstanding Mr. Mellon's input, the next question for us is where to build our factory.
How about fantasy land?
I always loved that fantasy land because it's the truth. The guy is like, you know, and see, this is the biggest problem that we face today in all of our, with our educational system. You know, our education.
Stop. Okay.
Pause me.
God spoke. Yes. Words mean things. The most valuable, the most powerful. Emily Dickinson, poet laureate, said the most powerful thing in this world is a word. Yes. Sometimes I just look and stare at it and it begins to shine with power. The power of words are everything. They manifest light. They manifested the world, the heavens, the firmament. They did it all. Okay. So if you can own the word, pervert the word, turn it upside down, twist the words, deceive the people, divide, deceive, and destroy through false words or artificial words, right? We have sound money and fiat money. Why do we have sound words and fiat words? The Department of Education is not about educating. It's about programming.
Right.
And again, we have to understand these things. Look at how deep this matrix goes. The Department of Education is about programming us to become idiots like that professor, not realists like Rodney Dangerfield. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're looking at. I mean, and unfortunately, then they do the PSYOP to get us to have all our kids spend their whole time thinking about GPAs and college visits and spending $200,000 in debt to go to one of their factory training PSYOP centers. So they program us and then they get us to pay for the programming on a debt that can never be discharged even in bankruptcy. You can't get rid of a student loan because they have to pay the programming propagandists in the institution to get us to go and teach so they can teach us a bunch of shit that's not true. I'm sorry. Went on a rant.
I pulled this up because, you know, this is what you wrote yesterday, and I'm going to read it because I thought it was, I read this yesterday with you on the phone, and it was extraordinarily powerful. Diane, yes, I put a link to the thing right below your comment about what, you know, in terms of he read a book every day. That was, and incidentally, that was written by a gentleman who knew him for at least 10 years. So, which I feel like carries a little bit more weight than people who didn't have any idea who he ever was. They were just writing things about him because it was fashionable too. And they were probably paid a significant amount of money to do so. So this is a post that Rob put out yesterday. All roads lead to information. I know nothing in the world that has as much power as a word. Sometimes I write one and I look at it until it begins to shine. That was Emily Dixon, a poet. God spoke the world into existence, the law book. Broken, petty, vengeful men who seek to be gods by gaining godlike powers would logically attempt to steal, own, and control, weaponize, and the greatest power in the world, words. The technology of speaking is built with energy, vibration, and frequency. Language is the most powerful technology on earth, as discovered and proven by Nikola Tesla. Words can create, build, heal, program, destroy, and kill. It has been proven that all matter originates from words. All belief, concepts, inventions, contracts, plans, systems, friendships, enemies, wars, treaties, religions, cults, and covenants originated and exist as a construct of words and thoughts. As a man thinketh, quote by James Allen.
A book.
Thinking and speaking are technologies upon which all manifestations materialize. By no means are all manifestations good, pure, noble, or beneficial to mankind. The point is, our words and thoughts have infinite power. When words are invented, defined, misdefined, weaponized, censored, institutionalized, and malignantly programmed into individuals and societies, we must understand we are being manipulated to lie to ourselves. The most powerfully dangerous words ever spoken are the lies we speak to ourselves. And I'm going to read that again. The most powerfully dangerous words ever spoken are the lies we speak to ourselves. Creation of a word of a world reserve currency concentrates unfathomable riches and powers into the hands of wannabe gods. So it stands to perfect reason that wannabe gods would first seek to own, hoard, control, and weaponize the most powerful commodity on earth. Words. Follow the money helps us discover the originating source that spoke action, good or bad, into existence. Follow the words helps us discover who exercised the power. Hide the words helps us discover who may have or had dark motives. Mute the words helps us discover who fears transparency. Eat the words of God's truth connects to our oneness, authority, power, dominion, love, grace, kindness, unalienable rights, and the Creator's purpose for our lives. Choose the words. We eat wisely because we are what we eat. Who are we? Our actions speak so loudly the world cannot hear what we say, especially when we are hypocritical and the world sees us saying one thing and living differently. The media is the virus. President Donald J. Trump. Thank you, Ultra MK, for your passion, research, and spirit of abundance in exposing why the most evil, dark, and demonic forces must control information, data, elections, and money. It's all about their control over the narrative because words are the most powerful and valuable things on earth. Did I mention God spoke? Who is God? What did or does he say? Let's ask him. No third parties required, no memberships required, 24/7, 365 high-speed access. Seek first the wisdom of God. Now, this is a very interesting picture that that he uploaded yesterday. And this is Pfizer, who is Ball, and the FDA is handing Pfizer, or the god Pfizer, a baby, for presumably for burnt offering. And then you've got all the New York
testing, pharmaceuticals, burnt offerings, chemicals, poisoning, pharmakia, you know, sacrificial unit, for whatever reason, Pfizer collects the live, the dead, the aborted, all the above for their little pharmakia experiments.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, do you know who the first Western leader was that banned testing on animals?
Who?
Adolf Hitler.
Wow. Wow.
He banned animal testing for you couldn't use animals, and you couldn't do animal cruelty.
One of the reasons I what inspired that post, and thank you for sharing that, and thank you for reading it, Ron, but what inspired it for me was Michael Corey, Ultra MK, on that post that I had quote posted his, and below mine, he is an expert on Ericsson. He wrote the Ericsson Report, and Ericsson is a Swedish company that has basically consolidated virtually the greatest amount of power ever held over all technology domains, all election systems, the ERIC database system. They can control speech, DNSs, databases, text messaging, the 911 system, you call 911, you call the hospital, you call a police report, every emergency service in the Western world is routed through Ericsson. They see it all. They know it all. Laura Logan and he have done a 2 or 3 part series, I believe, but of the hours, she has finally, maybe a few months ago, got with Michael. Michael's spoken to General Flynn about this. He's spoken to Laura Logan about this. But the single, probably most powerful entity, more powerful even than the central banks, is Ericsson.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the ultimate Goliath in our nation, in our world right now. And he had posted something that inspired me to really drill down in on how all roads lead to information. And if we don't bring this Ericsson cartel down that connects Five Eyes, that connects all the secret spy ops, all the intel agencies, that's embedded in every website, every domain, and every big tech company, and every telecommunications company in the world, and they hoard it not for the benefit of mankind, but for the weaponization and power and control of the principalities of darkness, not the flesh and blood, but it's the principalities that want to rain hell over this earth. And right now, probably the greatest asset those principalities have is Ericsson in Switzerland or Sweden.
Yeah, I think yeah, there was a and the see Ericsson did telecom business in ISIS. Ericsson suspends all Russian operations indefinitely. Ericsson investigates reports of Iraq revoking work permits.
Ericsson is responsible for killing at least 300 or 400 of our special force operators. They built ISIS. They defended ISIS. They shared U.S. intelligence with ISIS. And they have the blood of 400 or 500 special forces operators just in one conflict alone on their hands. This is a group of the most treasonous, cartel, wicked, godless entities on earth. Obama is largely responsible for transferring all U.S. power and intel and control over database systems to Ericsson during his watch, while he also launched and created ISIS. If we ever noticed why, it just seemed that there's nothing we could do. We started 7 wars under Obama, and the whole, you know, Arab Spring started up, and this ISIL, as Mr. Effeminate liked to call them, he wouldn't even call them ISIS. It was ISIL.
All of a sudden,
they couldn't get rid of ISIL until Trump came in. In about 4 weeks, they were done.
Yeah.
The reason they couldn't get rid of ISIS is they weren't trying to get rid of ISIS, because they created ISIS.
That's right.
And one of the biggest partners in the construction of that PSYOP was Ericsson.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just want to, it's a little bit of a tangent there, but I want to give credit to my good friend, Michael Corey, for inspiring that post that I wrote, because it's
video, President
shows the president lifting weights at the hotel gym in Warsaw.
I just thought this was really funny here.
The badass lifting his 14-pound weight dump, his 4-pound dumbbells.
I think it was 14-pound weights. I think it was like five.
Look five. At him. Get on it. Oh, boy.
Wow. Wow, boy. Yeah. That was, yeah, get after it, boy.
Yeah. Right there. Crushing it with the iron, huh?
Oh my God! Yeah, I know. I know, like high school girls that can lift more than that.
Oh my God! Embarrassing. Ron.
That's embarrassing. But kind of getting back to what we wanted to talk about, really about attitude, and I laid the foundation here, really, because I thought it was a good foundation to talk about attitude. We cannot control what's happening in our world. We just can't. As much as we want to, and as much as we have confidence or skepticism about what is happening around, I think everybody has a sense of, there's definitely a sense of fear in every single person, because, the unknown is always fearful. Because it's unknown, and therefore we fear the unknown. But what we can do is we can be as prepared as we can for the unknown. And I think it's incredibly important to be prepared as best we can. But the one thing that you can control is you can control your attitude. You can control your attitude.
And that is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
The single greatest power we own is a choice to seek, to hate, to control our attitude, to succumb to fear,
mm-hmm.
to seek wisdom, to associate with better, good people, to stop. At any moment in time, there's not a person that's listening to this podcast that can't have their own road to Damascus moment and
right.
stop and turn 180 degrees and stop lifestyle A and start lifestyle B, and it's all right up here. It's all about your choice.
Do me a favor and describe the road to Damascus moment, because I'm sure there are people in here who may not know the Bible and they may not know what that means.
Well, I'll give it a very broad brush, very high level, but Saul at the time was tasked with persecuting Christians and brutally killing them and getting rid of them, for the powerful. And, he thought what he was doing was godly and moral and correct. And he was being noble and, climbing the ladder and getting higher and higher in the social ladder of esteem and, and prowess for his accomplishments, but on his road to Damascus moment, he basically called out and said, God, if you're real or, let me know. And he immediately had a flash of understanding that he had it all wrong. He was doing it completely incorrectly. And he immediately repented in his mind. And it's so important, Ron, for people to understand this concept. The word repent is a legal term. It's a legal term that means argue it differently. Try another way. Restate your case. Repent, I know it sounds biblical and it's a biblical word, but it's of legal origin, which means rephrase your thinking, your argument, your approach. And when we repent and go,
mm-hmm.
religion isn't exactly faith. Oh, I got this wrong. Oh, sex isn't love. Love is much broader. It's not distilled. Sweet and low isn't sugar. Beating my kid isn't discipline. A God of love that's of abundance, and the authority that I have and the wisdom that God can give me can show me that all men were created for purpose by the great creator. And I don't get to be the one to decide off with their heads or not because of some rule that somebody created out of their ass.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so he had a road to, and from that moment, he changed his name. Bright, you know, Saul became Paul, and Paul became the man responsible for writing perhaps more than 50% of the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
He became the most prolific scholar, writer, and teacher of the teachings of the great rabbi, Jesus Christ, in the New Testament, from a guy that was basically a paid hitman for the state, who repented, saw his wrong ways, had an encounter with God, and devoted the rest of his life to being one of the best teachers and authors and writers of the great creator's only son, Jesus Christ, teachings. Pretty cool moment.
If I'm not mistaken, he was blinded for 3 days as well. He was on the road to Damascus. He was blinded for 3 days, and God spoke to him and said, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" And then of course he answered, and then he said, "No, that's not what I want you to do." And he blinded him for 3 days, and then when he regained his eyesight, God renamed him Paul, and then Paul goes back to Jerusalem, and everybody was like terrified of him, and he's like, no, I'm coming to, you know, I'm now actually preaching the gospel. And it's like, how in the world can people, it's like, whoa, wait a second, this guy who used to like come after us and try to hunt us down and kill us is now on our side and is like our most staunch opponent or proponent. And you know, and you know, I can say the same thing for me in terms of my belief system in politics. You know, when I red pilled, I was like, whoa, you know, I had that epiphany change, and my focus on things shifted, and I looked at things differently because I saw, well, you know what, maybe these things aren't exactly the way that I thought they were. You know, there's somebody in the chat said, what about respect? Can you love someone that you don't respect? You know, and I'm going to default to the Greek words. There's six Greek words for love. Okay. There's six Greek words for love. There is eros, philia, ludos, agape, pragma, and philatia. And though they are eros is basically sexual passion. Phila is
a root word for eroticism and erotic and eros, right?
Yeah, phila is like a deep friendship love. Ludos is a playful love. Agape is love for everybody. Pragma is a long-standing love, probably more like the love that you would have for like a. Agape would, I don't know, would agape be for like a spouse? I think agape would be more for a spouse than pragma. And then philautia is love for the self. So yes, it is possible to love somebody even though you don't respect them. And God commands us to love everybody. You know, God commands us to love everybody. So,
and Ron, to that question, let me expound on that just a little bit. The seven of the top 10 commandments were all, they fell into one of three buckets: love, honor, or respect. Whether it's love your neighbor, love your enemy, love God, love your parents, you know, love, honor, and respect. Those are in the seven of the 10 commandments. Okay. There are no qualifiers. There's no comma. There's no prepositional phrase, you know, if they have your same skin color, you know, if they weren't mean to you yesterday, if, you know, they didn't cheat on your wife, you know, I mean, whatever the case may be, there were no qualifiers after the commands to love, honor, and respect. You know, Jesus took the Ten Commandments down to two, right? Love the Lord your God, you know, with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your enemy as you love yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, those are very remarkably hard to do. unless you have a faith and a study and a connection and an understanding that, look, why would I want to love, honor, and respect and love my enemy as I love myself? Because if I want to get as close to the oneness with God as possible, yet I'm holding hate inside of me, hate can't come out of me unless it's in me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Resentment can't come out of me. Jealousy can't come out of me. Lust can't come out of me. Greed can't come out of me. JFK talked about in his, you know, in his inauguration speech about how we're being divided and deceived by covet means, right? Mm-hmm. It's a consumerism and a capitalism. They market us with a chief marketing officer 24/7, 365 to get us to want to buy stuff. And if we don't buy stuff or we do it, then we have to compare our stuff to somebody else's stuff and keep up with the Joneses and buy. And the more we buy, the happier we'll be, right?
Exactly.
No.
That's what they sell us.
That's what they programmed us in the Matrix to do. So I guess my point being is, if perfect love, which is God, cast out all fear, and we're told 365 times to fear not, and 7 of the top 10 commandments are about love, honor, and respect without any qualifiers, and Jesus took the 10 commandments down to 2, to love God and love our neighbor as ourselves. Perhaps the reason that was is it's a law. It's a law of the Creator, and this is how it works. Rana, if I get pissed off at you and I hold resentment in my heart and I don't forgive you and I don't get it out and I hold on to whatever one of these lousy emotions are, 3 or 4 things are going to happen. One, you might be not even going to know it. Mm-hmm. B, we might not talk anymore. C, you may have no idea that I'm pissed off. But what happens biochemically? What happens spiritually? What happens inside of me emotionally?
It becomes tough.
The equivalent of me hating you or not forgiving you or being jealous of you or wanting to steal your stuff or whatever is like me drinking a cup of gasoline, hoping that it hurts you.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we do that? It can't happen. I can't hate you enough to get to even the score, to have the same bank account that you have, to make my wife as pretty as your wife, to make my house as big as your house, to get public recognition like you get public recognition. Hate, jealousy, anger, contempt, covet, means none of that changes anything, but it destroys me. So if our loving Father wants us to love him, he's going to instruct us on the things to do and not do. And what Amen. what we should do is love and honor and respect everybody. But to your point, doesn't mean you agree with them. You can love the sinner. You can love the prostitute at the whorehouse. Doesn't mean you got to go hang out with her and be a prostitute yourself.
Right.
Right. You can love her and honor and respect her, understand her, pray for her, understand she's been deceived, understand she may be arrogant, understand she might not want to change her ways, understand she has no clue about the medical problems she's going to have down the road, the psychological problems, understand that she's being used like a piece of property, understand that the guys that are coming in there, it's dangerous. It's wrong in every way.
Well, and you know,
why should I hate her? That'd be like me drinking a cup of coffee.
Gasoline.
I'm sorry.
One other thing that you didn't mention there is that maybe that's all she has left to sell, because she's so broken because of the system that we're living in that she doesn't have anything left. And that's the only thing that she can do for survival.
She's desperate. Or at least she's lied to herself and told herself, that's all I can do for survival. I'm not worthy. What's the old famous saying? If you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
If a person tells themselves, oh, we grew up in a small little rural redneck town, we either sold drugs or sold our bodies. That was the only two options. I couldn't do anything else. Those are the only two industries in my small town. Well, if you tell yourself that and believe that, you're probably going to go down the road, you know, a really crappy road.
Mm-hmm.
Statements aren't true. you could pick up a bag and hitchhike and go to a town 50 miles away. I mean, it might be scary, but it doesn't mean that you can't do it, you know? And so, I don't know. It's, you know, Ron, I think this kind of goes back to the topic of what we're talking about here is kind of have a right mindset and how to be humble. And, like, you know, who was it that Jesus, the great rabbi, the great teacher, loved to be around the most? It was children. Unless we had that childlike curiosity and innocence and desire to want to learn and really focused and an open mind without a chip on their shoulder and an ego and then you know how much I'm worth. I mean, you ever heard a kid ever say anything like that? I mean, unless, and he said, truly, listen to me, people. If you can't have the mindset of these children, you're never going to enter into a relationship with God. You're never going to know what heaven's all about. If you can't have an open-minded innocence and curiosity and a humility to learn like a child, that's what being born again is about. It's getting rid of all the barnacles off the bottom of the boat so then the boat can operate more smoothly on the waters so that we can have a relationship free of all the malignant programming that's been poured into us our whole lives. And that's the thing. We've all been born into systems of trust and tradition, right? We love our mama. We love our preacher. We love our teacher. You know, we love our college football team. My daddy and granddaddy are in the military. I'm going in the military. You know, you open up an account, put your money in a CD. That's just what you do, you know? So we're all born in this soup kitchen that cooks a bunch of rancid meals. And we eat them and we believe them and we tell them to ourselves until we slowly start to wake up and start to question and start to ask why? Why is it that way? Who created it? Who made the rules? Who says so? Why can't I? What are you talking about? I don't want, you know, until we question the powers and understand the true law with a capital L instead of legal fictions from the Admiralty Court, you know, godless buttholes, you know, that want to run the world. I mean, think of fiat currency as being, think of fiat admiralty laws that they throw out and put on the books like you would the fiat money press. They just hit a button and create trillions of dollars of debt, right? These people just speak shit out of their mouth and we have 4 million laws on the books. Well, in all seriousness, if we can't follow the two laws, Jesus took the 10 down to two and we can't follow two, how the hell are we going to follow 4 million?
We're not.
It's futile to even attempt to try for the most part. I mean, if they want to get you, that's when they say, you show me the man and I'll show you the crime. I'll make up a crime. Because they got a smorgasbord of stuff to choose from. You and I can't breathe. We can't wake up in the morning and not be committing a crime in their world. If they want to get us, and look at what Trump is illustrating, that very truth right now. But look at what they're doing. 400 years in prison, you know, 91 charges trumped up, made out of civil, idiotic, made up out of thin air, fiat charges, trying to put a man in prison for 400 years. For what? Made up, trumped up, to use a pun, charges that they farted out of their ass. Why? They don't have any intent of putting him in prison. What they want to do is character assassinate him in the mind and the psyche of the voters.
That's right.
They want to keep him out of office by making him look like Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
Right? They want to make him look like this evil tyrant dictator. And oh my God, if he gets back in trouble in office, the world's going to go to hell. Well, guess what? Their world is going to go to hell.
What I want to do here is the primary reason that I went down that road about Hitler. It's not because I'm not trying to celebrate Hitler, but what I am trying to do
No, we are not. Let's make it clear on the record. That's not what we're trying to do. And look, he's one of those ones in the top seven that says we should honor, respect, and love even our enemy. So, A, we shouldn't have this idiotic amount of hatred But at the same time, we're not making him out to be a saint. No one's right. A saint. There's only one person. We're not doing that. So, you know, the people out there, the trolls, they'll try to clip and jib and jab and take all this stuff out of context and do what they do. You know?
But what I am trying to say is that there are a few things that happened to him in the 1930s and things that he did that I feel like are parallels in our modern society. Number one is, when he first tried to take over the government, he tried to do it the wrong way. And he admits that, freely admits that. That was called the Beer Hall Putsch. And what that meant was they were trying to do a violent overthrow of the Weimar Republic. And ultimately what happened was the police arrested him and they put him on trial. And when they put him on trial, he had the opportunity to have a captive audience in the courtroom. And the judge was so impressed with him that he gave him a very lenient sentence. Now, the parallel that I'm drawing there is, guess what's going to happen in springtime?
Somebody's going to get a microphone. They're going to get to air out all of the evidence.
Right. And when that happens, what's going to happen? You are not going to be able to conceal that.
You can't make up the epic moment in history that we're about to have because he gets to present his evidence because he's been falsely charged. And this is all about exposing a two-tier justice system. And who was standing right beside him when he gave his inaugural address?
The military.
The military. Judge Advocate General. The JAGs were right there. And he's gonna speak these truths in their corrupt civilian court, but it's going to be adjudicated with tribunals.
I defy you to go and look at any other presidential inauguration and look and see any time that a president gave the beginning of his inaugural speech with the military behind him. Never. It has never happened.
Never happened.
Ever. Ever. Now, secondly, you talk about the economic miracle that the rabbi talked about, and that's a historical fact. That is not
it's not political. It's not made up. It just is.
It is historical fact, and you look at what what Germany was dealing with at that moment in time, and they were dealing with hyperinflation. I read this the other day. The price of food in Germany doubled every 2 days for 20 consecutive months. People were being paid daily to go buy food. Daily. Because by the time they got there, now I don't know if it's going to get that bad, but I think it's going to be bad. It's going to be certainly worse than anything we've seen as Americans. So, and I truly believe that if we get when Trump does come back and he does the things that need to be done, what's going to happen is it's going to turn this country around so fast. I remember when DeSantis first ran. And they said, "Well, why should we take you?" And he says, "Well, because I can serve for 8 consecutive years." And when Trump's response to that was, "I don't need 8 years; I only need 6 months." I only need 6 months, and I actually believe that there's a lot of things that he can do, I say this very trepidatiously, but I do believe that when he does come back, it is going to be, I don't want to say a dictator, but I do believe that he's going to have a commander-in-chief powers because it's going to be a militarized situation. You know, it's just like the movie, I don't know how familiar you are with the movie Gladiator, but when... when Marcus Aurelius in the movie Gladiator reaches out to Russell Crowe, "Listen, I'm going to empower you to make Rome. I'm going to empower you to basically rule over Rome until Rome is ready to go back to a senatorial system, and that we're going to go away from the Caesar dictator system. And I feel like that is what Trump is going to be. Trump is going to be that commander in chief. He's going to come in and he may have dictatorial powers for a brief period of time in order to get the country back in order.
There's a video out there that says, no, I'm not going to be a dictator. I'm going to be a dictator at day one only.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to close the border and I'm going to, there was one other thing. I forgot what he said. The second thing he was going to do was, I don't know, fire the judges or I don't know, shut something that was corrupt down. But one of them was, no, I'm just going to be one day, day one, I'm going to end the border and I don't know, end the Fed or something like that. No,
drill.
Oh, drill. That's it. Drill, baby, drill. That's what he said. We're ending the border and drill, baby, drill. And then it's back to normal. That's what he said. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So but my point is that I truly believe that we are going to see an economic turnaround like the likes of that nobody has ever seen. And we are and with that, it is going to accompany the greatest flourishment of human ingenuity the world has ever seen, because the human ingenuity has been stifled. Because if you have an idea, what you do is you take it down to the patent office and you file a patent thinking it's protected, but meanwhile it's being stolen by Chinese firms or places around the world, and your ideas that you've patented and you've got protection on are now being stolen and being deployed in other parts of the world. So we're going to go back to a situation where you're going to have intellectual property protection, and the human spirit is going to come up with all of these amazing inventions, and our world is going to be phenomenal going forward.
You know what? I was just off the top of my head. You got me going. I just wanted my card catalog system in my brain just started, but let's assume he said, and again, he doesn't like to be wrong, and he's rarely wrong. We don't understand the timing sometimes and what he means, but he doesn't like to lose. Okay, and he's proven to be pretty damn accurate about everything he's ever said. So we're going to create the greatest miracle economy in history. What's he going to need to do, and what do we know he's going to probably do? He's going to end interest. Hitler did it. He's going to end interest, right? Because interest is paid to privateer bankers. And in a sound money system, the Middle East doesn't charge usury. It's illegal. Dubai, UAE, Saudi Arabia, Iran, all the Middle Eastern countries, they don't charge interest. They have a very flat, marginally flat income tax and no interest. You seen Dubai lately? You seen how unbelievably clean and rich and prosperous those cities are, and how much commerce is taking place, and the Lambos and the opulence and the wealth and the cleanliness and the order. But Here's just think about this. Let's logically think in our heads. What would happen if he ended interest, ended the Federal Reserve? We had sound money backed by gold, which basically kills inflation. We started drilling our own oil, didn't have to buy it domestically. Internationally. We started onshoring manufacturing back. We reshored. We brought everybody back and we sent to China. We start manufacturing again. We start making America great again. We start rebuilding the infrastructure, the highways, the roads, the hospitals, the schools, all the institutions that are corrupt have to go away, and we have to start anew, from education to health to transportation to the 6,500 patents that have been sequestered in the patent office. What if those get released? Right. And we have innovation like we've never seen before. So just those things alone, sound money. If there's no Federal Reserve, there's no debt anymore, because who do you pay your credit card, car loan, house loan, right, mortgage note, student loan to? If the party that was involved in manufacturing the fake currency no longer exists and we have a different kind of currency, are we obligated under even their contractual system to pay U.S. Treasury dollars or U.S. to Federal Reserve notes for right, a car loan or you mortgage?
You can't bring a debt-based monetary system into a system where there's not going to be debt-based.
And it's asset-backed. Asset-based right, versus debt-based, right? And if the entity that was embedded into the contract for the loan agreement or the mortgage or the car or the credit card no longer exist, there's no one to send it. The contract falls apart.
Exactly.
It's the adage, Ron, I like to explain to people, well, he's not a dictator. He can't cancel all those loans. Well, A, he won't be the one doing it. When the Federal Reserve goes insolvent and shuts down and goes bye-bye, they will be the ones doing it, not him.
Right.
And death by greed. They will have died and imploded by their own greed in nefarious ways. That's why they hate crypto. It's why they hate transparency. It's why they hate accountability. That's why you've got Jamie Dimon and Senator Warren out there talking about, if I could wave a magic wand, I'd make crypto illegal tomorrow. I bet you will, because crypto is about to kick your ass, right?
We're getting kind of close to winding down here, but I'm going to play this. This is about a 3.5 minute video, and this was Trump about 9 months ago talking about a quantum leap in the American standard of living, and I think this is extraordinarily important to listen to.
Past generations of Americans pursued big dreams and daring projects that once seemed absolutely impossible. They pushed across an unsettled continent and built new cities in the wild frontier. They transformed American life with the interstate highway system, magnificent it was, and they launched a vast network of satellites into orbit all around the Earth. But today, our country has lost its boldness. Under my leadership, we will get it back in a very big way. If you look at just 3 years ago, what we were doing was unthinkable. How good it was, how great it was for our country. Our objective will be a quantum leap in the American standard of living. That's what will happen. Here are just a few of the ways we can do it. Almost one third of the landmass of the United States is owned by the federal government, with just a very, very small portion of that land, just a fraction, 0.5%. Would you believe that? We should hold a contest to charter up to 10 new cities and award them to the best proposals for development. In other words, we'll actually build new cities in our country again. These freedom cities will reopen the frontier, reignite American imagination, and give hundreds of thousands of young people and other people, all hardworking families, a new shot at home ownership and, in fact, the American dream. Another big opportunity is in transportation. Dozens of major companies in the United States and China are racing to develop vertical takeoff and landing vehicles for families and individuals. Just as the United States led the automotive revolution in the last century, I want to ensure that America, not China, leads this revolution in air mobility. These breakthroughs can transform commerce, bring a giant infusion of wealth into rural America, and connect families and our country in new ways. Likewise, through our Strategic National Manufacturing Initiative, which is going to be very big and very, very successful, we will turn forgotten communities into hives of industry, producing the goods we will no longer import from China. We will also have a major initiative on lowering the cost of living, with a special focus on lowering the cost of a new car and lowering the cost to build a single family home. And they will be beautiful homes. And I will ask Congress to support baby bonuses for young parents to help launch a new baby boom. Finally, I'll challenge the governors of all 50 states to join me in a great modernization and beautification campaign, getting rid of ugly buildings, refurbishing our parks and our public spaces, making cities and towns more livable, ensuring a pristine environment, and building towering monuments to our true American heroes. Very importantly, I will also make sure all of these new places are safe. We love and cherish our police. They will do the job the way they have to. It is time to start talking about greatness for our country again. I will dramatically increase living standards and build a future that brings our country together through excitement, opportunity, and success. Thank you very much.
I think that says everything right there. And that's what we have to look forward to.
Ron, will you do me a favor? Go to my Twitter feed again, because you've got an easy way to share the screen, and look for a post I did at 8:52 a.m. my time. I guess that'd be earlier in your time. But this is dovetails perfectly with what our commander-in-chief just talked about. Scroll on down to that one right there. Yeah. So blow that up, if you don't mind, full screen, just so we can – I want you to – this is part history and part reality. How's Trump going to do this? Is he just going to pull it out of his rear end? Is he just going to make it up? Is he going to – what has been happening? If we go back to 1956 in the Department of Energy, that's when the Q security clearances in were first born. Top secret restricted data, formerly restricted data, could be handled – only by people with a Q-level security clearance that, as defined in 1954 by the Department of Energy. So let's think about, where did Q first get born? It got born by the Department of Energy and those that were working on, you know, the nuclear bomb, nuclear weapons. That's point number one. Scroll to the top, if you don't mind. Since Trump was born, I mean, inaugurated and been in office, look at Executive Order 13794, establishing the American Technology Council. This was in April of 2017. I'm just going to hit some highlights. He ordered a Executive Order 13772 to completely, fundamentally redesign and rewire the financial system. Okay. And in July of 2018, a report came out to do just that. Basically, eliminate the corrupt monetary system and basically render the Fed irrelevant, have us go back to our own more digital internet of value monetary system that's going to help us make not only our nation great again, but the whole world great again. 2019, the first division of the military that ever was created since the 40s, the Space Force. Well, look what rolls up to the Space Force. If you go and look down, the Space Force is Space Command and the Space Force, and all military agencies roll up to it. And look at quantum.gov, a whole brand new quantum department of the federal government that was born under President Trump's watch. Look at all those agencies that are basically, report under the Space Command, Space Force, the agencies of quantum.gov. Look at all of those communications, the National Quantum Initiative. He's not just speaking words. The plans and the architecture for this has, we're talking about quantum security, computing, finance, energy, encryption for the financial system, communications. How do we have our data not hacked, our information not hacked, the Ericssons of the world not be able to function? Our platforms be censored because some bureaucrat in a technical company over in Italy, is doing the dirty work for the people in the swamp? How do we have data integrity? And on the right-hand side, if you'll look, go to the top right of the corner, I just kind of started, here's a real thing. Do we know our key events in history? Our founders had a vision. They had to have a body of laws before they could even declare war against the crown. So the Uniform Code of Military Justice defined the Army, Navy, and the Air Force, or the Army, Navy, and the Marines. We had to have a military and a body of law before the 56 founders could actually sign a Declaration of Independence to declare war for independence against the Queen, right? So then 11 years later, our Constitution gets signed and a Bill of Rights gets signed. Well, the whole thing really begins to unravel in the Banking Act of 1871. But in 1913, when Woodrow Wilson signed the Currency Act and gave our treasury, our money system, over to privateers in the city of London, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the Vatican Bank in 1913, we lost our country. Mm-hmm. I care not who makes the laws. I just want to know who makes the money, who creates the money. I mean, those were, that's a paraphrase quote of a you know, a Rothschild and said, I don't really care who the hell you elect or what your laws are or anything. All I care about is who makes the money, because we'll control everything. So,
if I may interrupt you for just a second, to the point there, people need to understand that prior to 1913 and the Federal Reserve Act, the flow of money went from the states to the federal government. That was the whole point of the senators. The senators were responsible for the budget, and the budget that was proposed by the federal government. The senators were elected by the state governments. The constituency of the Senate is the governments of the states. That was the state government's say in the business of the federal government. And the 17th Amendment took the states away, took the states out of that. It essentially made senators over-glorified House of Representatives, and it made it easier for the senatorial elections to be manipulated. But you accompany that with the Federal Reserve, and now what happened was that the Federal Reserve started sending money out to the states. It reversed the flow of money, and by reversing the flow of money, it gave more power and authority to the federal government, as opposed to having the power where it was supposed to be resided, and that was with the states.
And it illegally and unconstitutionally led to the way of the 16th Amendment that gave us the income tax.
Correct.
We had no income tax, and we had no interest rates, and we had no central bank until 1913.
Right.
So, first of all, we can end interest rates. We can get rid of a profiteering, privately owned, central foreign privately owned bank that operates for profit. And that's why all wars are bankers' wars, because they lend so much money to the warring nations, and then they charge interest on the money they lend, and they make a gazillion tons of money off the interest that they lend to the nations that are fighting wars that the bankers instigated. Right? I mean, it's just the most ridiculously demonic system in the world. So you get rid of the central bank, you get rid of the motivation to weaponize nations against one another to profit off of the wars that you create. All peace and prosperity reign supreme in the absence of bankers who are financially profiting off of war.
Exactly.
So what happened after 1913? We had World War II, which really consolidated power. But in 1944 in New Hampshire, we had Bretton Woods.
Yep.
We went from the Federal Reserve controlling America to the Federal Reserve controlling the world, because Correct. It became the World Reserve currency.
And then that
blew up, and we went to 1971, and Nixon took us off the gold standard, and Kissinger and Nixon gave us the petrodollar in 1974. We went bankrupt again, and they couldn't pay the bills, and Rumsfeld comes out and goes, "Hey, we don't know where $2.6 trillion is," and 9/11 happens.
Yeah, the day before 9/11, exactly the day before
9/11 happens. And then 8 more years, economic crash. We couldn't pay it off. We were insolvent then. Boom, the great financial crash in 2008. And then, so we're insolvent again. Now the patient's on life support. The patient can't breathe. They got tubes all in them. They're sitting on the bed, dead. Banks are dying everywhere. They're just slapping shit together. They're pumping interest rates down to zero. And they're pumping money into the system. And they're telling us all the patient's alive and healthy and good. You know, everything's fine. While it was truly... we were insolvent at that point. But then here comes the savior of capitalism in America, the guy that wanted to fundamentally transform America, who actually hated America, who had never even stepped foot on the shores of America's continental United States until he was 18 years old. This intelligence plant operative gets shoved down our throat and put in office for 8 years, named Barack Obama. And we lived with that for 8 years until the miracle of Trump happened. They never thought she would win. And so sandwiched between an Obama and a Biden, we had Trump. Look at what he was capable of doing with just some truth and application. And look at the hell the media gave one man between Obama and Biden. And so here we are today. What happened with the Federal Reserve? What happened with Russia signing a deal with Saudi Arabia? What happened to the petrodollar? What happened to Henry Kissinger dying at 100 years of age, 50 years after he signed the petrodollar deal in 1973, 50 years later, he dies. I mean, you can't, if the Federal Reserve is dead as we think it is and know that it is, and the media won't report that it is, Ron, then the Federal Reserve is going to go away. The interest rates are going to go away. Sound money is going to come back. Inflation is going to go away. Right. Debt's going to go away. Taxation is going to go away. The size of the banks are going to drop by probably 75 or 80%. And so is the size of the federal government. It's going to drop by 75 or 80%. We don't need the monolithic.
I agree.
Idiot against. So if people can get their head around the history of what's happened and how we got to where we are, then it's not so fanciful a concept to think, wow, you mean we could cut out all this fat? We could get out of all of these rules? You mean I can go directly to God and have a conversation and I don't need to go through the 811 steps the Catholic Church tells me I have to have I don't have to have an intermediary send my prayer up the ladder and then report back to me what God said to the priest so I know? No. You can get rid of all of that middle bureaucracy and go direct. You can get rid of a lot of the friction or the fat that's in the system and be more lean and be more efficient because the system benefits from the fat and the friction. We, the people, don't. The system does.
Amen.
If we want to put people first, we got to get rid of all the friction and all the fat.
There's a so somebody asked him the question. Somebody asked a question about paying off all our debt, and you know, this kind of touches on the Nasara Jassara thing. And so,
just a bit, Ron. We're okay. Not going to pay off our debt. The debt's just going to disappear.
That's what I'm and right, and that was where I was going. Number one, I'm not necessarily a believer in the whole Nasara Jassara thing. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we aren't going to see aspects of that come to fruition. And I believe that the debt is going to go away because we cannot take debt into a system that doesn't have debt.
What does the Bible say about that? You can't pour old wine into a new sack.
That's right.
Right? We can't take the old wine or pour new wine into an old sack. If we're going to have a new form of money, sound money backed by gold without interest issued by a different issuer known as the United States Treasury instead of the Federal Reserve from overseas that's not federal, they don't have any reserves, that is new wine. We can't pour the new wine of the U.S. Treasury into the Federal Reserve system. It can't go into that system.
No.
Brian Brooks came out with a video a couple of days ago, Brian, that said, the worst, I hate the name cryptocurrency.
So do I.
I hate it because you know what it is? We're not replacing any currencies.
No.
It's not that currencies are bad. We're replacing the banks.
Mm-hmm.
It's crypto banking. It's a whole brand new monetary system. It's the name cryptocurrency gives people complete confusion and makes it difficult to understand what's happening right now. We're going to have currencies. We're going to have 195 or 200 different currencies. They're going to be issued by sovereign nations inside the sovereign borders, and everybody's going to issue their own currency. And then if they want to adopt an ISO 20022 standards where they can then have interoperability and free trade with their fellow neighbors in a peaceful way, then America will get to decide if we want to do business with Japan or Germany based on whether their currency is valid or not, right? Each country gets to make that decision. We're not getting rid of currencies. We're getting rid of the banking system.
Mm-hmm.
That's what DOT is doing. It is getting rid of the cartel banking system.
Or what we're doing is we this is where I talk about, you know, investing in like the digital assets. You know, you don't need to invest a lot of money into digital assets, but you guys, you have an opportunity right now to invest into the infrastructure of the coming financial system. And that's the protocols. And that is what is the XRPs, the XLMs, the XDCs, the Algorands, the Hedera hashgraphs. You have an opportunity to invest in some of those now while they're inexpensive. And you know what? You don't need to put thousands of dollars into it. You don't need to put half your portfolio into it. All you need to do is put a little bit. You know, I tell the story in 2010, I was going to put $100 into Bitcoin, $100. That $100 would have been 10,000 Bitcoins, which today would be worth like $450 million.
You know, Rod, do me a favor. Anyone that would like to piggyback or steal or borrow or look at any of my research, I've done about 200 Substack articles. It's at robcunningham.substack.com. I'm a pretty prolific researcher and writer, and I'm on the advisory volunteer, just customer advisory group with Link2. Been to a lot of their conferences, been to the XRP party, you know, in New York, went to the first XRP conference in Vegas that Brad Kimes put on. So my background is management information systems. I was an investment banker. I was a mortgage banker. I owned a training company, leadership, sales, and business development company in the mortgage space. So I'm a gearhead, a tech head, a fintech guy, you know, a top secret military clearance with my Air Force instructor pilot days. So I'm just saying that because I'm very analytical and I'm very wonkish and I'm very financially oriented and I'm systems oriented. And I like to understand systems, both finances and avionics and political systems. And you know, I like to do this. All of my work is free. So you get what you pay for. Okay. No complaining if you don't like it, because I ain't charging for it. Okay. But it's my honest, best expression of what I found in my research and my writing. So if you want to find anything to get a little deeper understanding about why XRP exists or what this whole crypto argument is about, if you didn't know, if your audience didn't ask one thing, Ron, it ought to be, why does the media hate it so much? And if we wanted to play the opposite game, we ought to probably like what the media hates.
Correct. Amen to that. Amen to that. Well, brother, listen, we just crossed over the 2 hour mark, so yeah. I'm gonna let you go enjoy your day, because I know you've got you're gonna go watch the Army Navy game.
Yes, sir.
And yes, sir. So I'm gonna let you go do your thing, and I appreciate you taking the time to join us on this Saturday morning. This was extremely impromptu, guys. We just kind of just threw this together at the last minute. And again, the foundation that I laid in terms of some of the things that, you know, I fervently believe that the reason that the powers that be hate Hitler so much is because he stood up against the powers that be that Trump is standing up against, and why it's the exact same reason that the powers that be hate Trump. So again, that's not to say that he was a perfect individual. That's not, when I'm not celebrating him, but I am drawing the parallels between the two, because I do believe there are a lot of parallels if you study history.
The same people, the same folks that hated Hitler and Trump put a bullet in Kennedy's head.
Mm-hmm.
It's follow the money, follow the power, follow the lust for control. And yep. If you follow those, then you'll find out basically you can reverse engineer almost anything.
Right. Exactly. Well, brother, hey, thank you again for taking the time and making time for this morning. This was really good. For being an impromptu show, I think we did a pretty good job.
You are a great host, brother. You have a great ability to bob and weave and outline a topic and break this down. I love these discussions, Ron, because they're tabletop. We're trying to do our absolute best, not to win an argument, but to state a case. And People are free to choose to call us anything, and ignore us, laugh at us, mock us, you know, get curious, dig deeper. Life is a choice, you know. Absolutely. And we don't have an agenda. I'm not selling anything. I'm not making any commissions. I'm not, you know, a spokesperson for an organization. I just want to thank you for honoring me to be a guest on your program. You know, thanks to your audience. And if you're watching this on recording, just, you know, we wish you well. And if you have an abundance mentality, if you have a quantum abundance mentality, and if we believe that God is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, and we're connected like the branch and a vine are connected to omnipotence, And our cup's going to run at the over 3,700 fold, and we're supposed to give. It's better to give than it is to receive. We're already wealthy. We don't live in a world of scarcity. Then Ron and I can sit here and give away all that we know because it was given to us, so we can give it away. We're trying to do our best to bring education and empowerment and wealth and a spirit of no fear into a world that wants us to stay afraid.
Exactly. And with that, do not be afraid. Talking about the attitude and this, you know, the patriot attitude is you keep a positive attitude, you know, be happy, be excited because man, the things that are coming on the other side. I mean, I'm not suggesting that we're not going to go through some difficult times, but if you can, you know, stay alive and stay alive, stay alert, stay happy, stay positive, and you will be rewarded on the flip side of this. Now, our true reward is going to be in heaven, but you're going to be rewarded here on earth with the things, you know, you're going to be rewarded. You're going to be rewarded with health and wealth, and you're going to be rewarded with, you know, and wealth is not necessarily just money.
It's not rich.
Wealth is going to be, you know, you're going to be rewarded with friends and family and just, I mean, a multitude of things. You know, wealth is across the board. So
wealth is spiritual. Riches is materialism. We can have both because riches are tools, right? Whether it's a hammer, a gun, a rake, a dollar bill, whatever it happens to be, that's just a tool to do the work that we were put here to do. And to your point, Ron, there's a reason we're supposed to have armor. Mm-hmm. Why we're supposed to have spiritual armor. But if we don't know that we even have a suit and we don't know how to put the chest plate on or the helmet or the boots or the belt, because we don't understand the laws, we haven't studied the laws, we haven't tried them on, we haven't tried to walk around in them, we haven't used that armor of God, we can still put the armor of God on and laugh and smile and joy and not have hate in our heart. But we have the armor because we know we live in a fallen world and there's a bunch of people that are going to lie and cheat and steal and throw stuff at us. And we have to armor up. But when you armor up and you know the laws and you know the ways of our enemy, you can go dance in an IED field because you're going to avoid every one of the IEDs, have a good time and have a party, and you just won't step on the IEDs.
Right.
But you know, but that's why we put on the armor, that because we have recognition of the way the enemy operates in this fallen world. But why did Jesus say, these things I've done, you can do an even greater thing? If you understand the laws and principles that I'm teaching you, guys, listen to me. If you understand the parables and the lessons and the laws and the principles that I'm teaching you, then the things you've seen me do, what you've witnessed me do to heal people, to move mountains and break bread and feed the multitudes, the things I've done, you can do in even greater things. It's about principle, beliefs, and mindset, and knowing who we are and whose we are. Then we can live without fear. Jesus, the Bible knew 365 times it said, fear not, because the currency of the fallen world is fear. And we were told, don't spend that currency. Don't use that currency. Don't adopt it. Don't accept it. Don't operate in the currency of fear. Operate in the currency of energy, vibration, and frequency that comes from God, that goes through our DNA, not through the currency of the vanities of the mind that they're trying to trick us into believing this is the reality. As you see, only that you see with your eyes and you think up here, that's written. No, Jesus said the exact opposite.
Exactly. Amen. Brother, thank you again. And go enjoy the Army Navy game. Go Navy.
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that one, brother. Okay. See you, man.
Okay, brother. Hey, man. Take care. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in on a Saturday morning. We really appreciate y'all. And if you're watching this after the fact, you know, just, you know, keep your spirits up. It's we may have some difficult times ahead, but keep your spirits up because there's going to be reward for us at the end of this. So just keep
and share it with anybody that you love, anybody that's waking up, anyone that's curious, anyone that needs hope. Please share Ron's video with others and beg them to just grab their favorite beverage and spend a couple of hours and open their mind and just, you know, try to have their own little road to Damascus moment if they can. Just ask if they'll watch this video. Because again, we're just trying to bring light. We're not trying to sell anything. We're just trying to bring light of understanding to trying times in history.
Amen. 1,000%. Couldn't said it better, man. Thank you for that. All right, guys. Well, we're going to cut it off. You have a wonderful afternoon. We will, I will be seeing you guys. If I don't see you tomorrow, we'll see you on Monday. So we'll look forward to having Rob back another time very soon. So thanks again, Rob, for joining us today.
Thank you, Ron.
Alrighty, take care, guys.